or maybe just plain 181?
Could be just plain 181. And I don't see any problem with that.
Other questions on number four?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Rogers?
Yeah, somehow the last line on that, the word, I'd like to ask staff to just double check to see that. I know what the intent is, and that's correct, but I'm not sure if we have to say is required for the projects. You know, if that sentence maybe needs to refer back to the projects again, and I just ask staff to double check that before we adopt the committee's assessment.
Mr. Chairman, conceivably now the Power Authority has a feasibility, or a reconnaissance grade study complete, plus the feasibility study, which includes FERC licensing. At this point, conceivably, we would not proceed forward with a project requiring no state assistance unless we had legislative authorization to do so. We have therefore clarified on page 8, line 12, the fact that we cannot go into advanced engineering and design without legislative authorization. And so consequently, we have suggested rewording line 12, page 8, as follows. The authority may not begin work on engineering and design beyond that required under AS 4456-183 until the legislature approves the proposed new project, if the proposed project is one requiring legislative approval. And then, of course, the next line, which would remain, would be the legislature may approve the proposed new project only by an act of legislation authorizing the project. Mr. Chairman, under beginning on line 17, page 8, under what is termed applicability of sections, we would break that into section A and section B. And so consequently, we would insert A right after sections. Then between lines 25 and 26, we would recommend the following, subsection B. Provisions of AS 4456-177 through AS 4456-189 do not apply to any new project which the authority will finance only and for which there will be no form of state financial assistance other than revenue bonds issued by the authority. This would facilitate and provide for the authorities being able to proceed forward with a project such as Golden Valley Waste Heat. It's one in which the utility would totally bring the project to the Power Authority. They have done all their work themselves. There would be no financial commitment of the state. The security would be totally on REA plus Cooperative Finance Corporation. At the present time, the Power Authority has no authority to proceed forward with any project, even where there is no state assistance. This would allow the authority to proceed forward with a project such as Golden Valley Waste Heat. The eighth proposal, line 26, deals with project construction, but it also discusses financing, and so we feel that the main title should be expanded to include project construction and financing.
Number nine,
page 9, line 24.
14.
I'm sorry, 14. The present suggested language for operation of power projects is extremely limited. It would not provide for the Power Authority to recapture debt service associated with other obligations, nor debt coverage, nor other items that we would normally put into one of our contracts. We would therefore recommend deleting the one clause starting on page 14 after authority through line 17 ending with them and inserting in its place When a power project is operated by the authority, it shall enter into contracts for the sale of electrical power from the project in accordance with AS 4456090, which is part of our contractual requirements in our existing statutes. In the event that such contracts provide to the authority revenues which exceed costs specified in AS 4456090, then excess revenue shall be transmitted to the Commissioner of Revenue for deposit in the State General Fund. So that you know what 090 includes as part of our statutes, I'll pass this around. Finally, Mr. Chairman, amendment number 10 does nothing more than augment the definition of a feasibility to include the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission licensing and the engineering and design work that goes in as part of that step.
Questions, Mr. Lane? Anything for Mr. Rogers?
Yes, sir. We have several proposed amendments by Representative Malone. Have you reviewed those, Gary?
I had the opportunity to review some of them this morning, and I would say that we generally concur on the applicability of some of them, but I really think that they've almost got to be offered up before in a position to.
Okay.
I've even taken at least one of his recommendations and included it as part of mine.
The committee was standing at ease just a minute, unless you have something further. Mr. Dugan forgot to bring Mr. Malone's amendments. You have your
part. I think that it's something that the committee is really going to have to debate. I'd be happy to answer questions, but it's a total change of philosophy and policy. And it has generally to do with the revolving loan fund rather than the process by which the Power Authority brings projects forward.
I wanted to make an observation that, as far as I know, the Alpetco hearings are not going to be going on during the mornings. And if we were to schedule a morning meeting tomorrow, that might help Mr. Yule finish up his business and also allow Mr. Malone to make his pitch.
Could you make the 8:30 meeting in the morning?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Could you, I hate to put this on you, but could you give us some assurance that Mr. Malone will be available? You should.
I'll go check right now.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll let you know if Mr. Malone can make it. Get back to it.
Thank you.
All right. House Bill 629, Community Schools. Off of today's agenda, so we will not be taking that one out.
What are you done smiling about?
Nothing, I just remembered last year.
He was on and off the calendar several times.
Looks to me
Good morning. Since you're a sponsor on these bills, we're just looking around for a sponsor, but don't we?
What bill is this?
$672, right?
Greg, I'm watching you. I know you're...
Senator, Mr. Anderson, House Bill 672, prime sponsor, you're on.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I... I don't know if the members of the committee have a proposal for education legislation to serve seven regions in Alaska regarding what adult basic education. And justification is it has a budget and then goes into funds necessary to implement new regions.
No,
I did ask that it be distributed earlier, but please would like to tear it off and make this available.
It's
I think it explains basically what the intent of the legislation is.
I'm wondering if maybe some of the monies that's requested in 672 might not be coming out of 629 also at community school. Are you familiar with that one?
I do have some information on 629. I'm not sure what.
Well, basically, that's a community school program. That's what boiled down to an act of lead community school. In other words, that puts it in the budget and DOE budget. Now, now, so to speak, at a certain percent. 1%, I think it is, or 10,000, or either up to 1% anyway, of their operating. And the one question I had, is this the same type of program if I have to do? Is this the same type of program you're talking about in this community
Well, it may be the same. I don't know the details of the community schools program.
Mr. Rogers?
No, the adult basic education program is different from the community schools. It's oriented primarily to such things as English as a second language, bringing adults up to high school standards, basically getting high school education, whereas community schools is more on community interest kind of courses. There is a difference between the programs.
Mr. Chairman, I would have no objection to tying the two together if the committee thought that was advisable.
I was just asking for more information.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'll just go into a very brief summary of what the adult basic education program that I've been requested to bring to your attention. The amount of money that is being requested on a statewide level would allow those individuals who do not have a general or GED equivalency of education. We're talking primarily of adults who have a minimal amount of education level in the state of Alaska. The information that I have right here, the regions that basically would receive money under this scheme would be the North Slope, Northwest Arctic, Crystal Bay, Aleutian Pribilof Islands, Kenai Peninsula, Rural Anchorage, Jamatsu, Valdez, Copper River area, for a total amount of $617,500.
Mr. Anderson, could I ask a question? What criteria was used for selecting these particular areas or communities?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we used a special report by Robert Nathan and Associates. It is a federal government study that showed statistics, and this is just for Bristol Bay, but I'll go through the rest, that the Alaskan Native people as a whole for the Bristol Bay area, that's throughout the state, the median education in school years completed by Alaskan Natives as a whole was 7.4, grade 7.4. For Bristol Bay, the school years completed was 3.5 years. Okay. Further, the studies identified 50.3% of the population 25 years of age or older as having an educational attainment of 0 to 4 years of formal schooling. In this population, a group only 8.6 have completed 4 years of high school or have an equivalent high school diploma. In the Northwest Arctic, an active comprehensive program of adult education based on conceptual framework of adult performance levels is a prime requisite. And this comes out of the same study and indicated that it was found that 42% of respondents had attended high school to eighth grade or less. Another 13% of them attended between 9 and 11 years. 45% were at least high school graduates. From this information, there was a strong suggestion for a need for an adult basic education program. And I think what I'd like to emphasize to the committee is that, as you well know, with the passage of the Claim Settlement Act and other types of state governmental programs, there are a lot of people out there that have a minimal understanding of the English language who are being asked to make an awful lot of decisions that affect their long-term economic status. And because of that minimal amount of understanding of the English language, they're having a very difficult time in formulating programs and other kinds, or even legislation, that would help those individuals help themselves. So what this is basically is a primary attack on a problem that that we have identified as a problem, not only in my area, but in the Aleutian-Pribilof area. I think the same kinds of problems occur. Village and city governments have been found to fail or are faltering, and there has to be then, because of the very thin layer of leadership capability, the need to import outside consultants and outsiders coming in and more or less dominating those village and city governments and causing, in my way of thinking, a lot of problems. And I think that if the state were to import or to implement an active adult basic education program, then a lot of these education problems could be eliminated, and a lot of the local people then could become engaged in administrative type work. As I think you know, up until just 15 years ago, if you had a high school education, it opened up a lot of doors for you. And there are a lot of people who have a high school education who have tremendous leadership in state government. And I think just recently, or I should say maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I don't recall what year, Representative Osterbeck and his wife received a GED through studies, I think, through an adult basic education program. In the Matanuska-Susitna College identified 4,600 adults having less than a secondary education in the Matanuska-Susitna service area. The Bureau of Labor Statistics revealed a July unemployment rate of 15.1% and November 23.3%. And there have been indications that there were a lot of these people who fell into the unemployed category. They had a minimal secondary education, they could have been eligible or qualified to get into the employment stream. The North Slope Borough, the native residents of the North Slope have a median school completion level of 5.6 years. And this gives us, you know, in state government, a pretty good idea that if we are creating jobs out there that require at least a high school education to be qualified for any kind of job up in that area or many parts of the state, a lot of the local residents are simply not going to qualify. So the idea here is to get into the very basic education level and to have people become sufficiently competent in reading, writing, and understanding the English language so that they can become qualified.
And, Mr. Anderson, the reason I ask the question is because I noticed conspicuous by its absence on this list for any communities whatsoever in southeastern Alaska, and I couldn't determine whether we should have something to be thankful for or we were being discriminated against.
Mr. Chairman, I wish I could answer your question, but the information that I received here that I'm using as my justification for these needs here did not include southeastern, and why that is, I can't answer.
Mr. Rogers?
Did your information cover the interior region, villages, or towns? I know that we've got what's rated as the best ADE program in Fairbanks right now, but we're unable to offer services to Delta, Fort Greeley, Tok, Healy, Anderson, Cantwell, and the like. And I understood that there was a, in conjunction with this bill, some work had been done as to what the appropriation should be for Interior and Southeast to cover the non-native small towns and provide these services. Do you know anything about that?
Mr. Chairman, I do not.
Could I ask staff if we have any information on? So I recall it was about $300,000 for Southeast and Interior.
Mr. Rogers, is there someone else in the audience that wants to testify on this bill in the time?
I can testify to this bill today.
Thank you. Maybe we'll get some answers.
Mr. Chairman, the idea was to place this in front of the legislature with available information that I had, and I'm not prepared to answer about the Interior or Southeastern Alaska. All I know is, what I can give you is what I know about these particular areas based on studies that have come to my attention.
Questions, further questions, Mr. Anderson, come from the committee? No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did you wish to testify on the bill?
Yes.
Have a seat. Please give your name for the record.
Yes, I'm Clark Jones, and I'm the supervisor of Adult Basic Education, GED. And in response to proposal was developed by the State Adult Education Association, I'll give just a very quick overview of how Adult Basic Ed is funded in the state. This year we operate on a budget of slightly under $1,200,000. And what we had was originally, we put the money out for small amounts of money that went to almost every region in the state. And this didn't prove enough to develop anything, get any strong programs developed. So we went to a regional basis. And what happens is, if we put approximately $75,000 to $80,000 in a given region to set up the mechanism for it, then they're able to contact and work with CETA, they work with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They're able to get contracts for service, develop contracts for service with other agencies. So we found that the $75,000 to $80,000 in a region generally develops, depending on the region and its resources, as much as $200,000 in money from other sources, and in some cases as much as $400,000 to $500,000 from other sources. And the regions that don't have the basic program going, it just doesn't tend to get off the ground. You know, it doesn't have a spokesman, it doesn't have someone there to take charge of. And so another question that does come up consistently, and that's the fact that community colleges ask for adult basic ed money, Department of Ed asks for it, and so on. And what has happened is some of the community colleges have quite a commitment to it. And so, for instance, Anchorage Community College gets approximately $190,000 of the adult basic ed budget. But Anchorage Community College also furnishes a rather good building for it. They furnish janitorial, they furnish, last 3 years, they furnished one full-time staff member, and I know that they have come back a number of times to add staff. And this goes in, you know, over and above our money. We're aware of it. It's, you know, cooperative effort kind of thing. So there are other sources of funding that are used, so that basic ed does come up repeatedly in other kinds of budgets. Last year, the adult basic ed program generated approximately 3,300 adult high school diplomas in the state.
Would you know just offhand whether Ketchikan Community College has any program at all?
Yes, Ketchikan Community College has a small program. They have approximately $12,500, which purchases 3 part-time staff to run evening programs and some during the day. It's rather limited program.
Mr. Chairman, how about the Kuskokwim Community College?
All right, Kuskokwim Community College, for their urban program, have approximately 40,000 in their urban program from state money, and they have about 85,000 to 90,000 for their outreach program. And then they rely very heavily, because, you know, it is very expensive to get into the villages and so on, they rely very heavily then on CETA Title VI money, on some other CETA program monies, and on Bureau of Indian Affairs for added funds. So they fund from the 3 major sources. And we put in approximately half of their dollar volume. They generate quite a bit from other sources. But this does not reach everywhere in the Kuskokwim region. We're talking about funding enough to provide service to approximately 14 or 15 sites. Bethel and about 13 other sites.
Mr. Moss.
My desk, I forward Yukon, Panamal, Tope.
All right, the same...
What do you do to cover them?
Okay, we're, very simply, we're in the same position. The reason that we have come for the seven regions is the fact that in seven regions we have essentially no service, no opportunity. In all of the regions, all the major regions in the state, there's still, it's a statewide, it's a token effort. On $1,200,000, we served approximately 5,000 students last year.
Well, for example, are you spending, let's just talk about Fort Yukon a minute. You got a Valdez Copper River deal on you. I'm interested in the Copper River end of it, too. Are you spending $75,000?
No, that's the intended amount.
Are in Fort Yukon?
No.
Are in Tananaw to bring the interior communities up?
What that amount would be...
What are you spending there now?
What we're spending there right now...
Where's it coming from?
Sure, we're spending approximately $30,000 right now to put service into what advises Valdez and Cordova right now. Mm-hmm. And when we put it up to this full status, why then there's somebody, what it does is it gets somebody, number one, to get instruction into about four or five villages to buy supplies and materials to furnish a fairly unlimited number of villages, and then to get someone on duty full-time that can go out and get these other sources of funds. For instance, right now they're negotiating for BIA funds and they're negotiating for CETA funds. But they're doing it on, they have one part-time person to do it, and you know, that's just, they don't have adequate time to go out and to do the job.
But they're not doing it at all, are they?
Right now, there's...
Fort Yukon, Tope.
No, for Yukon, Tanana do not, to my knowledge, have programs at the moment, no.
But there's quite a few hundred people up there that are in trouble, George, for the same thing that Mr. Anderson brought out here a few minutes ago.
That's true. What we do is, we spread our money as wide as we can spread it, but we don't begin, you know, on $1,200,000, we don't begin to be able to reach the entire state. What we're trying to do is get limited service into the remainder of the state and then back off and take a look at it and see what we can do to get to the entire state.
Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
One more question, Mr. Chairman. And what you're saying, in order to implement a program in the interior area, like I'm talking about Tope, the Tananaw, Fort Yukon, and also down here in the southeast, you're talking about another $150,000 tab there on this $617,500 we're looking at.
Okay, to actually...
To actually get those programs going in the interior and in the southeast?
To get any given site going, you know, in so that it has a substantial program, and that's for a program that would run 6 hours a day, approximately 4 days a week. It costs us about $10,000 per village or per outreach site to run. And at this point, we're using the state money to support basic positions that go out and essentially hustle the dollars that go into those others. And the one thing there is, we do feel that in one way, it is good use of the dollars because CETA does have dollars for that first purpose, you know, of adult basic education, but they don't have the responsibility for it. A number of people, BIA has some dollars in that category, but they don't have the person responsible to go and implement the program. So ours has been an implementation thing, but even from all those sources, we're only talking about, I would say roughly $3 million to $4 million statewide.
Let me ask one more question. The amount of money that's being asked for here in the $617,500, and say we did go that $767,500, how much other monies would that generate?
That would generate...
This is state money we're talking
right
about. How much would that generate?
From other sources, we would anticipate it would generate a minimum of another $600,000, but we have very few programs that don't generate considerably more than that. The Nome program on about $73,000 or $74,000 this year is generating another $250,000, $300,000. The Kuskokwim Community College is generating, that I know of, about $110,000, $112,000 plus they're negotiating with BIA. So most of them do generate very significant amounts of money from other sources.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you very much, sir. Anyone else here to testify on this bill?
Was the backup attached? I know it wasn't in the other committees.
No.
I have
the
backup.
I just had a two-page.
Okay, I have a backup sheet. This is a position paper that was developed by the State Adult Education Association. Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Chairman, I move we report out a committee substitute for House Bill 672 with the amount of $767,500 to include the nine regions, including Interior and Southeast.
Is there objection? Hearing none, it's ordered. You get the figure.
767. So it's what, 75? 75 feet in two regions.
Next item on the agenda, House Bill 629, Community Schools. Senator Buckle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the record. I'm from the Buckle, State Representative for 29, Scolari. The bill before you is House Bill 629. This bill is a bill that addresses a very popular concern for many of our constituents, not just in our district, but I'm sure in yours. In testimonies that we have heard in the House Health Committee, many, many people came and testified in favor of passage of this bill. As you know, the existing statutes, AS 1436, provides for 4 years of funding of this program. The first year, up to 0.5% of foundation support. The second year, up to 1%. The third year, up to 1.5% of foundation support. And the fourth year, 2% of the foundation support. There are now 21 school districts in the state of Alaska that are threatened of being dropped off if a bill of this sort is not passed by June 30th, 1980. And a listing of that is available to you if you wish to get a copy. I have a listing of them just to mention these community schools: Anchorage, Bristol Bay, Gillingham, Fairbanks, Haines, Funa, Juneau, Kenai, Pinto, Klawak, Kodiak, Matanuska, Susitna, Nome, North Slope, Sitka, Valdez, Yakutat, Ada, Bering Straits, Delta Builli, and Southwest Region. There are about 36 school districts participating in this program, and over 50,000 people are enrolled in the program. The bill calls for a change in the formula. The bill calls for a 1% state grant on the, foundation support money, or $10,000, whichever is greater, to all districts operating community schools. In addition, the state will match up to 1% of the foundation support money, or $10,000 local support, cash or in kind. The bill also calls for a grant application that must include an assurance that the community school program will be reasonably accessible to every resident of all communities within a district which expresses an interest in having such a program. And the community schools program will be evaluated by the Department of Education at least once every 4 years. That's what they figure out, a rotating evaluation. And the report will be submitted to the legislature annually. So far as we have it, the bill does not call for the monies that would be used for evaluating this program. The suggestion would be about $50,000 to evaluate the existing program annually. And the department, after several programs failing because of lack of training by people who administer the program, will now provide training of personnel and help the programs develop an internal monitoring system. This was one of the problems we had last year when we had the House Bill 394 before our committee on the Health and Social Services, because there were problems concerning accountability of the program. Some of the testimonies we received was that there was not enough accountability, and people were spending money in a way that was not compatible to the requirements by statutes. Things have changed since then, and I think that a member of the Department of Education will testify on that account. I don't really have too much to say except the fact that this bill is one of the bills that I have never seen so many people testifying in its favor. People saying that it's very successful in their communities and that they would like to see it implemented this way as Container Hospital 629. I'd be glad to answer some questions.
Could you explain to me, Representative Buchholz, the difference and ramifications between the original bill and the committee substitute, since I figured about what appears to me pretty close to a $4 million difference in the price tag?
The original bill merely called for the extension of the program as the statutes required. We were going to extend another the life of the law. And we finally decided that the best way to address the problem is to go under this thing. And we worked on it during the interim. And the way it turned out is that we would address it in a committee substitute as you have, as you see in your packet. The change then would be the way the percentages go. And I'd rather that I'd wait for Mr. Chairman, to explain to you what it is, because it is rather complicated. I do have the figures like you have, but I think he could. If you want, I can get off and you can come in and testify.
Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, given the fact that the thing does have such a high fiscal note, I'd like to see the thing continued, and I'm wondering if the choice comes down to leaving it as it is and having it die somewhere along the way, or continuing it at the existing level past 4 years, would you be better off going back to the original bill or some combination of the original bill and the committee substitute, say keeping it at 0.5% plus the 0.5% match instead of going to a 0.5% match?
I can answer that a little bit, Mr. Chairman. The, if we went to the full funding, as those programs are ongoing in the fourth year now, they would have the 2% full funding. The figure I have would be about $4,606,000. The budget that you see for the implementation of this bill at 1% is slightly higher and then the full funding that we would have. The fiscal note that you see for full funding under the bill would be $5,323,000, and the full funding at the existing status would be about $4,660,000. There isn't really much difference. It is, you know, $3,000 difference, but it's not, you know, a big jump that you would have if you can get 2% full funding.
Mr. Rogers.
Then this fiscal note at 5,323, since we're already at 12.9 in the budget, the actual new fiscal impact is less than that. The fiscal note actually on this is $4,094,000.
Further questions from Representative Buchholz? No, thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify on the bill? Would you give your name for the record, sir?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Miguel, Supervisor of the Education Program in Alaska. More or less, what I would like to do is answer any questions that committee members would have concerning the bill. We have received a lot of phone calls in the department from the people in the field, community residents, as well as community coordinators, in support of House Bill 629. We have at this point monitored or evaluated 11 programs in the state, and that report will be coming to you, I guess, as this bill is different, it's the 15th day of each session, according to next year if this bill passes through. So you will be receiving an annual report as we monitor and evaluate the various programs throughout the state. I think Representative Buchholz brought out the difference between this bill and the funding level on the current bill, the Community Schools Act of 75, so I don't need to get into that. I should have any questions concerning that.
Mr.
Scott.
Could you clarify the fiscal note, Joe? Is
sure.
$5.3 million in addition to the governor's budget of 1.2, or does it incorporate the governor's budget of 1.2?
It incorporates.
Okay. Mr. Rogers is correct.
This set of figures that Representative Buchholz gave us here, FY81 full 2%, totals out to $4,616,654. Now, is that the one we're looking at here on our fiscal note for $4,734,000?
The FY81 full 2% is with the current statute of the Community Schools Act of 1975, and the one off the fiscal note is utilizing the 1%.
Utilizing these figures here?
I'm sorry, I can't see which one you have.
Are you utilizing the breakdown of these figures here? I think you have a copy of them there on the desk.
This one is off of the Act of 75, and the one off the fiscal note is the one that is coming off of the new formula that's in House Bill 629.
Okay, the next question I've got, if I may.
Go ahead, Mr. Moss.
Anchorage, for example, up here, FY80, first figure in the first column is $256,646. The FY81 full 2%, this is on the bill as it stands now, is $1,232,199. Is that what they'll get in that community deal if we leave the bill alone the way it is?
If the bill is funded, the Act 75 is retained and is fully appropriated, then they would receive that $1,232,000
figure. Okay, now let's go down here to the last school district in the bunch down here. For two columns there, it's got zero. That's UConn Koyukuk. Now they got a $92,491 figure for FY81 full 2%.
Okay, UConn Koyukuk had submitted a grant application for FY80. The plan of service was not approved, so therefore they were not funded. In order to come up with the implications monetarily, we did go on the basis that they would reapply for funding and the plan of service would be approved.
Mr. Chairman, if I may continue. And the bill as we have it here, with the fiscal note that we have applied here, will give these figures to these schools that's in this last column that's on this sheet of paper here.
No.
Okay, what do we need to do to do that?
I have a set of figures that I don't know if it was distributed to you that goes with that physical note. You have not received it?
We're looking at the same figure. You're not looking at the same figure, don't you?
Everybody got it. This one goes with the old foundation. The fiscal note that we've been talking about goes with the new foundation formula. So these would all be higher with the fiscal note that we're looking at.
If I may continue on a little bit more. Mr. Chairman, this program right here to me means a hell of a lot more than a lot of other programs that's going on. These community schools are very important. I want to make sure that somehow the door don't slip and the money gets out of this, because there are people going to school today learning some of the things that they didn't have the opportunity. And that's why I asked Representative Anderson a little while ago about the other bill we just previously discussed, about the tying of the two together there. And I'd like to make every effort, if we can, to see that the adequate funding comes through for these schools. And I think it's very necessary. End of comment.
Mr. Rogers.
Were made according to where they were.
Okay.
So that some of those districts would be on third, some of second, third, and fourth.
Okay. And so the difference then between this and the one we're just getting now is that everyone goes up, we assume everyone goes up to the 2% because of the local effort?
Yes.
Okay. And then we've also got, this automatically has changed because the foundation formula changed, the unit value increases. Now, do you operate now under a short funding statute, a proration? Is there a proration?
Currently
statute?
We're operating under a proration, yes.
So really, whatever, on the fiscal note, if we went up to the $4,094,000 of new money, that would bring us up to 100%. Last year we operated at 43%.
43%, yes.
And this year would be 41% or something like that?
It would be, I'm not sure, I think I figured out about 38,
okay. So really, when it comes to the bill and the fiscal note don't necessarily go together, in that the fiscal note is more based on what percent of proration we want to do than on the changes in the bill.
Right, and I think that there was built into that a clause that would allow for the proration.
Okay, so
when we get ready to move the bill, what we can do, we'll just have to determine what proration we want to use, if any, or if we want to go 100%. So the bill can be passed without a fiscal note. It just means we stay prorated at too low a level, or we can put on the size fiscal note, the bigger that we can get through, the better. Okay.
Scott?
Yes, sir. I think one of the problems, Mr. Chairman, that the committee was having is that there's a second data sheet, which we didn't pass out. I apologize for that. And that's the one you just received from us. The initial data sheet, as Joe was mentioning, was from the analysis under the current statutes, which has $4.6 million over in the far side. The second sheet is a separate, completely separate data sheet run, assuming the passage of the committee substitute for 629, which does change the process by which community school money is distributed. The 1% foundation supplement in the first column would be the basic grant, or the second column, excuse me. And then the fourth column would be an additional 1% grant, assuming there was a local match in between. So you have a maximum, minimum $2.6 million and a maximum $5.3 million being distributed, assuming full local matching around the state.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask, is this calculated under the SB 199 foundation formula?
That's my understanding, yes.
Whereas the FY80 is, the first sheet we got is under the old
formula.
Hopefully that'll clarify some of the questions, Mr. Chairman. We're talking about two different expenditure processes. The old statute, which was the original sheet we gave you, and the new proposed bill, which changes the distribution to a flat 1% plus an additional one based on a matching process. But it would total $5.3 million.
Further questions? If not, thank you very much. Anyone else? Give your name for the record, sir.
Don McKinnon, Superintendent of Schools in general. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just won't take much of your time, but the board asked me to come speak in favor of the bill. The Juneau Schools runs an extensive community school program, not in all of our schools. We'd like to be in all of them. But it is the one way we make our facilities available to the total community, and there's a tremendous amount of adults involved in it, and we would certainly want to see the program continued. We are concerned about the old statutes that would have left us dropping by the wayside. So we support the concept of funding of the program.
Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Anyone else? Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd be interested in having staff prepare a couple of proration sheets. Maybe we can just figure it out by hand, but looking at the data, what happens if we fund it at 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, or 100%? We've got the 100% figure, and we've got the 38% figure, but nowhere in between. I would like to see this legislation move, but I can count votes.
Could you do that
for
sure.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
I think the problem, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure Mr. Rogers is aware, is the assumption of local match. And that's the thing we have to work on.
Representative Buckholz. We do have a present fiscal note if you're interested in that, Mr. Rogers.
Okay. Yeah. And I'd also like to see a 75%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
I can average it right there.
I'm sorry, Mr. Which was the one that she said?
She's got a 50% fiscal note.
I'll be glad to do the 75%.
Could you prepare 75?
Would you do that for us, Mr. Scott,
yes,
get it back to the committee?
Yes.
Since we have canceled out on Senate Bill 228, we have nothing for us at this time.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Rogers?
Can I ask if we come up with anything on fiscal notes? How those are going to be handled?
We have had considerable discussion, but we have not reached a solution yet, Mr. Rogers. And as soon as that decision is made, apparently there's a misunderstanding of some of the people in the leadership and as to how the process really works, so we're going to have to that, and hopefully we'll do that very shortly and then get on with it. This one.
Okay.
There's nothing else to come before the committee tonight. Before Mr. go ahead and take testimony anyway, Mr. Malone, would you proceed, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name's Hugh Malone, representative from House District 13. And And, Mr. Chairman, I do have a copy of some amendments. There's a list of 10 of them, but I believe Mr. Yule discussed with the committee yesterday. And I don't know if the members have that in front of them right now.
Yes, Mr. Yule's amendments, yeah.
And I think I discussed most of these amendments with Eric, but I got immediate comment on one of them here, suggestion. Go down to amendment number 7.
Now you're speaking of Mr. Yule's.
Yeah. Before, I think. Which, in some of the amendments I have covered the same points, the same types of things, but just on amendment number 7 here. Which starts on page 8 between lines 25 and 26. Page 8 is lines 25 and 26 deal with the applicability of the sections in the Revised Power Authority Act to new projects. It's in that section of the bill. And the suggestion here in the amendment is that the provisions do not apply to any new project which the authority will finance only and for which there will be no form of state financial assistance other than revenue bonds issued by the authority. I'm not quite sure that it's really a good idea to make that language that exclusive, and I think that we might want to consider adding, if that amendment's adopted, adding language that says that if the project meets the criteria established by the power authority under sections 177 and 181. In other words, that the authority ought to be able to require as a condition of financing that the project meets certain minimum standards, and perhaps it doesn't need the approval by budget management and so forth. Presumably it would need the approval of the authority in order to receive financing through that agency. And the criteria that the authority has to establish for the development of the reconnaissance study, and the criteria that the authority would establish for those types of projects under the responsibility for the feasibility study and the plan of finance, I presume would, you know, some criteria there would have to be met.
Would you then suggest that we add to that something like the authority may require a with 177 and 181, or the authority may require reconnaissance and feasibility studies prior to financing. I would assume they'd have to have those anyway, but just to make sure that the authority has that power.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's what I was talking about, and there's probably several ways of writing the language. With not any deep thought on the subject, the suggested language I had was something to the effect if the project meets the criteria established by the authority under 177 and 181, under 177 the authority has to adopt regulations defining the techniques which it shall apply to determine the information required in the reconnaissance study and standard criteria and measures. And in under 181, uh, page 7, is pretty much the same what language appears. So those standards that are established by the authority, I would presume that there would be some sort of standards that apply to the project, and I just would like to make that. I think if language like that's adopted, it ought to contain a provision that the authority has both legal or statutory authority and the responsibility for having standards to apply to these projects. Although, if the financing is not state financing, then the budget checks and so forth that are built into the process, legislative approval and so forth, doesn't seem that, at least right now to me, doesn't seem that those are necessary. Anyhow, immediate comment I have on the proposed amendments.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hauge.
I got one question I want cleared up. How does this affect projects that have already gone forward to the point where only they're waiting for a FERC license?
Chairman? Well, under the, I think under the, that'd depend on where the state financing or state financial assistance is anticipated, depend where what the status of the project was as of the effective date of the act. If it's been approved by the legislature, then it would come under the...
What are you talking about now? Feasibility, steady money, and things like that?
No. If the... project itself... if there's been a reconnaissance study and so forth, and the project has been approved by the legislature before the effective date of the act, then the new review guidelines and specific steps wouldn't apply to that particular project.
Would those resolutions for Swan Lake and Tayu Lake and Terra Lake that are in the process of going through the legislature, would they wouldn't have to go through all these hoops one more time?
Mr. Chairman? I don't know where we are in the question of the resolutions versus the use of statutes for this. Now, the projects being approved, some of them are in resolutions, but are they also in a bill?
Yes, they are. And in talking with Mr. Walforth, we think it's important that we pass both the resolution and the bill because of the Alive decision. There's some question as to whether the resolution itself is sufficient because the law requires a resolution. There's some wonder as to whether the bill itself will be sufficient. So his advice would be to do both.
Where's that bill at now?
It's the bill and the resolutions are in this committee right now. There's one more resolution coming out of Resources Thursday, and that'll be ready.
Okay. I'll go over the amendments that I had suggestions to the committee. I think members have copies of them. There's no page numbers on the copies that I have, but they're just listed as proposed amendments, and it starts with number 1 on page 3 after line 11. It's a handy reference I can give you. And in that, there's a long list of things there, which is basically a recitation of what we have in present subsection C, which under 170, which isn't shown in the bill. We've got B in the bill rewritten, repealed and reenacted. And then subsection C, which is the next part of 46-170 has all the items that are shown there except item 5 and 6, which are the proposed changes, and they should be underlined, but they're not, and I apologize for that. Number 5, okay, this first of all, this applies to loans from the fund, and we're immediately going to get into the philosophy on the whole thing. Number 5 states criteria to establish financial feasibility, the amount of state subsidy, or if you want to phrase that differently, but the amount of state assistance necessary for individual products, projects. And 6 are compliance with the requirements of the chapter. Now, the that amendment in number 5, at least, criteria to establish financial feasibility, carries an idea that is expressed in the next 3 amendments. So I'd like to go into those and then go into the explanation, the reason why I'm suggesting it. The next amendment, number 2, deals with the section on under 170 for loans for hydroelectric projects and suggests that the interest rate on loans should, and it sets a standard, which is a floating rate, average rate of earnings on the permanent fund, which is an index for market rates for loans. It's not the market rate, obviously, but it provides an index that could be used, others could be adopted. In the same section, it goes on to state the legislature may appropriate a subsidy of the interest rate is needed to make the project financially feasible. And then grandfathers in the water resources revolving loan customers that have loans outstanding. Subsection 3 amendment number 3 on page 4, line 18. Just makes it clear that it's an attempt to make it clear that if a project after the determination, the reconnaissance, and after the feasibility, that a loan may be forgiven, although it take an act of the legislature to do that for projects that turn out not to be feasible.
Are you talking now about the reconnaissance study, planning, design, engineering, FERC application?
Well, hopefully, if they determine that a project isn't feasible at a certain stage, you know, it's a judgment call, of course, but if it looks like a deck stacked against a thing, that at that point everybody's pretty much going to agree. And the idea behind it is that these loans are project specific, and if a particular project just isn't going to work out, that at least there should be the option of writing off the whole thing. The loans originate through the legislature with the general fund. There's a certain amount of risk in this, and it may be determined that a project just isn't going to work out. And at that point, if people agree on that, they come to the legislature, and there's no practical way of repaying the loan, they can write that loan off and effectively become a grant by act of the legislature. That the language already says that it's just a rewrite of that section. That's already in the bill. But the next change is a substantial one, and it deals with the whole philosophy of financing here, and it's on page 7. Goes to after line 9. We're in the part of the bill now dealing with the plan of finance for a project. And the object under amendment number 4 is to determine, among the other elements in the plan of finance, that if state financial assistance is required to make the project financially feasible, that the plan of finance would include an estimate of the amount of state assistance necessary, so that the legislature would have an idea, at least within a order of magnitude at that stage, as to how much commitment, whether general fund or general obligation bond or through some other mechanism, is going to be necessary to make the project feasible, and can use that information to make a determination on how they should allocate the state bucks. And financially feasible isn't really defined within the bill. That's another judgment call anyway. But that the plan of finance would show the legislature the amount of state support necessary to make the project financially feasible within the best judgment of the people responsible, in this case would be the power authority. And some projects might take a grant, some projects might take a loan. The amount could be greater or lesser, but it gives them some sort of a handle on what the commitment is to the project if they want it to go ahead. That's only an estimate at that point, and unless it's a probably a relatively small project, they're going to be dealing with a refined estimate later on. In fact, all these are estimates up until the time the projects, all the bills are paid for the construction of the project, but it'd give them the break-even point, you might say, as to how much state assistance is required. Now, that's normally shown in the plan of finance anyway. And but just incorporate that into an item. Okay, I'd like to go over the reasons for the amendments dealing with financial feasibility in amendment number 1, in amendment number 2, and in amendment number 4. Right now, the way the bill is constructed, the way the laws are, in fact, also I guess the way the law is written, but at least the Water Resources Revolving Fund, but the way the bill is written is that, number 1, hydroelectric projects are provided with a set interest rate, which right now, of course, is substantially below the market rate for money. Sometime in the future it may be above it, but I don't think any of us can foresee a time when market rates are going to fall below 3%. And that limitation is aimed specifically at hydroelectric projects. So number 1, you're building in a bias into the whole financing plan to do a hydroelectric project. If at 3%, a hydroelectric project makes more sense than some other project at 5% or 6% or 7%. And I think that's a problem. It's a problem because you're building an artificiality into the law that is going to predispose people to do hydroelectric projects. And secondly, if people don't have a hydroelectric project available to them, then how's their project going to be handled? How are interest rates and determinations going to be made on the project? Is the interest rates not set out in the law? So what I'm suggesting instead is this, that for any project where state financial assistance is required to make the project feasible, that a determination be made, really be made in the plan of finance, as the amount of state financial assistance necessary. And then the legislature can make a determination in the funding as to whether they want to commit that amount or not. Hydroelectric projects are only one type of project, and not every project would require an interest rate as low as 3% or as low as 5%. So what'll happen without some sort of flexible approach to the thing is that some projects that require, say, an interest rate reduction from 8% down to 6% to make them financially feasible will be standing in line behind everybody else that's lined up at the 3% window or the 5% window for hydroelectric projects. So you're in danger through that interest rate scheme, setting it out in the law, of warping whole determinations on the projects and end up misallocating money. In other words, suppose somebody needs an interest rate break of, we'll just say a differential between the market and the project debt service to make it financially feasible of 2%. And that's all they need to make the project feasible, according to the best judgment of the utilities experts and the financiers and so forth. Under the bill, if it's a hydroelectric project, they could get their money at 3% or 5% if money was available, if the legislature appropriated. So they get more of a break than they need, whereas somebody else that may not have a hydroelectric project or just may not be first in line that needs the same amount of break won't get it at all. So the idea behind these amendments is for the legislature, as for the power authority to recommend and the legislature to appropriate, state financial assistance as required for each project to make it financially feasible. Now, if the legislature wants to appropriate more than that or to provide a greater subsidy to a project, they always have that option. But at least I would presume for a grant to the project, but at least the projects would be on a common footing, that the first request that they'd make of the state, if state financial assistance is required, would be limited to the amount of financial assistance or subsidy or whatever you want to call it, that is required to bring the project to point of being financially feasible. Not anymore. And set out the rationale here, which I'll go through very briefly. Number one is that the way we have it written right now, we have a bias for hydroelectric projects and perhaps a disincentive for other types of projects. Secondly, is that there are other sources of financing available in the world besides the state treasury, but telling people at the front end that, you know, don't worry, you're going to get a 3% loan or a 5% loan means that they're not going to look at those other sources of financing, even though their project may be feasible at those rates. Today, perhaps, it wouldn't be, but a year from now or 2 years from now. They're going to come straight to the state treasury and place a demand on it, and they may not need that entire amount of assistance. Which means that projects that do need that assistance may not get it because the money's all gone at the 3% window or the 5% window. It's gone out through that. Just point out in item number 3 under the rationale. And then we get to a problem which we may not be able to solve anyway, but since appropriations are limited, those people who apply at the 3% or 5% window are first in line, get the available bucks. And those that aren't first in line don't get them. They wait and they wait and they wait. And if we put these criteria into the law for the administration of the loans or for the determination of the amount of state financial assistance required as required in the plan of finance, at least there's a clear expression of how the legislature intends to approach the question of subsidies or financial assistance for projects. And right now that's not clear. So that covers the first batch of the amendment, so maybe I ought to stop there and find out what questions or comments or objections that people have to that approach on state financial assistance projects.
Questions from the committee?
Well, Hugh, I got some concerns with what you're trying to do here. I think you realize that hydroelectric is probably one of the problems it has, that its front-end costs are really heavy, you know, a load. But the project, if the project is put to work, you know, in the first place, you stabilize the cost to the consumer. In the long run, you're going to have a project that's not going to be faced with all these inflationary problems that we have in other types of energy that you can develop. I realize there are other projects where hydro is not possible. Maybe it's coal or whatever, you know. And I think that they should have the ability, if they can serve a credit-worthy market, you know, to get that first helping hand in, you know, in the early stages to get them off the path, you know. And the project in my district, which in the first brush, it looked pretty shaky, and we've looked at three different sites before we got to the one that we're at now. And with the state's advance to something like, well, around $5 million, if we can't go ahead with that project on the basis of what we're trying to do here, is the state going to forgive the amount of money that we've received to this point and then be in the same position that we are now, when we've had the ability through these surplus funds that we've got, you know, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to develop some power projects that are, the end result is going to be an asset to the consumer. Have you taken that into consideration?
Well, yeah.
There are several utilities in this state that have 2% money and 5% money, and there's about three utilities in this state that have never had the privilege of having that money and would never have been in front of the legislature if we could have gotten money under those particular ones. You know, there's one project right here in this area, and I'm just using it as an example. 60-year, 3% money, you know. And I happened to be competing for that particular project at that time. In effect, was supposed to be a demonstration project. But the reason it went to this area was because it was going to make it possible for a pulp mill to locate in this area. The pulp mill is gone, the power project is here. Then they talked about an intertie, you know. This, they're talking about 20 years of time. And now we're at a point where we want to go ahead. I admit that 3% money, that's too damn cheap. But 5% money is reasonable. It's been a national trend to do things this way, you know. And well, your community enjoys 3% money and low-cost power. Several other areas in the state do. Some of the utilities around the state have 2% money and can't produce a kilowatt of electricity to a consumer for less than 30 cents and beyond that, you know. We can, if we get a hand on this particular one that I'm working on, with 5% money, I think that we can hold the existing rate. And the inflation from this point on, we're going to hold that rate. And the other type of energy that we would have to produce to meet those consumer demands would have seen a continuous increase in the rate from this point on, you know. And I have the feeling that we're trying to just plain nip a major power development in the head, you know. That's the way I have it sized up.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, what the idea is here, and it's a new idea. I think it's a new idea for, you know, project financing, this kind of project financing in Alaska, and probably in a better level of too, would be to develop in the plan of finance, first of all, you know, what is a financially feasible project? What, you know, what are the costs that need to be, you know, what cost levels a project is financially feasible? Now, suppose that project is going to cost $100 million, and suppose that the amortization over, we'll say it's a hydro project, over 40 years is 25% above the level that people would generally determine to be reasonable. Okay, that would indicate then the amount of state financial assistance that would be required if the legislature wants to put that state financial assistance in, the amount that would be required to bring that project into line. Now, so what the idea would be, you determine on a project by project basis, and based on, you know, based on the information that's developed by people in the utilities business and by the people in the financial business and so forth, all this would have to be brought together in the plan of finance the Power Authority develops. The amount of assistance required to make that project financially feasible, and that would be, in effect, the target point for the legislative appropriation. That would be the level or the terms that the legislature would, they first use to make a judgment as to whether they wanted to get into a project like that to that extent. And then they would, if they determined they did, then they would know what the appropriate level of state assistance was, say, for that particular community, because it's going to differ. So the idea would be to try to put all projects on the same footing, that their first source of financing would be the market. If for whatever reasons that did not produce a financially feasible project, then they determine, well, what type of assistance and how much is required to make this project financially feasible. They determine that. And of course, it's not necessarily an absolutely fixed number. It can vary over a range, and that there's room for discretion in it. But you come up with that information. And then the legislature looks at it, and they determine, okay, the appropriate amount of assistance for this project, according to these criteria, is at this level. They might argue over the nearest $100,000 or something like that, or the nearest $1 million or whatever, but that the idea would be to determine, at least through the process, the amount of state financial assistance necessary for any project to make it financially feasible. For some projects, it might be that the project can't afford, after paying operating costs, can't afford any debt service at all. There's only one way to do that one, that's make a grant. Other projects might be able to pay back money at a low rate of interest. Well, that's one way you could approach the project. Another project might be able to pay back money on a sliding scale rate of interest, increasing as the power use goes up over the life of the project. In each case, after the most practical plan of finance is determined, we'd also have a determination of the amount of financial assistance required to allow that project to go ahead. And then we can determine the cost of that financial assistance to the state and appropriate to that level, or appropriate the money to accomplish that. I shouldn't say to that level, because it isn't necessarily a level of appropriation. It might be an interest rate that you're talking about. But the idea would be that projects would get equal treatment. If they needed assistance from the state, some might need more than others. Some might need less than others. But we'd have, in effect, a benchmark for determining the appropriate amount of state financial assistance to a project. Now, why is that important? It's important because if the state, under any circumstances, is always going to have a limited amount of money available to spend, I mean, we see that this year. So if we're putting more money into project X than it requires, that means project Y may end up shut out. Now, if we only put the appropriate amount, the amount necessary to make the project financially feasible into project X, under those conditions, we can allocate the available resources among the different proposals up to the total level that the legislature is going to invest in these types of activity. We can allocate the money among the projects based on a standard. And the standard is how much financial assistance is required to make a project feasible. Now, if the legislature wants to go beyond that, that's a separate question, but at least the projects would be treated equally with that regard and give the legislature a rational way of allocating available resources among the competing demands for money. That's the idea. Now, in the case, I don't like using specific cases because I'm not familiar with all the details on a specific case, and I might say something that's out of line on a particular project and tends to confuse the argument. But in the case, we'll say, of a project in your district, perhaps that the form of financial assistance is a project loan for the entire amount of 5%. Well, then that determination could be made, and that'd be the basis of the financing. Perhaps the appropriate way to do it is through a $20 million subordinated loan or $20 million grant. What I'm trying to do is to come up with a criteria that is as near as may be as applicable as one to one project as another, that it relates directly to the legislature's involvement in the project, which at this point is mainly a determination of, you know, how much money are they going to put in, and do it in such a way that it treats the different communities with a reasonable degree of equity, considering the fact that the money that the legislature